Welcome to The Swing,
Canadian political analysis for a global audience.
I'm Yaroslav Baran.
I'm Heather Bakken. Yaro, let's start with your reflections on the overall numbers from the election.
Yeah, sure. Like, this was an intriguing election. First of all, the pollsters were not wrong. Their final results were basically within the margin of error of what we were saying for most of the commercial pollsters at the end of it. But the really amazing thing is, let's start with the Conservatives. They came in at 41.4% of the popular vote. That's huge. We haven't seen numbers like that for the Conservatives since 1988, which was the second biggest majority in Canadian history. So with 41.5%, they should have been sitting in the government's chair. They should be forming a majority government right now with those kinds of numbers. Similarly, the Liberals came in at 43.5%. So yes, higher, they won, but it's still not a majority. It's unfathomable traditionally to not have a majority government with 43.5% of the popular vote. And this is all a function of the implosion of the NDP and the partial implosion of the Bloc Québécois. The net effect of the elimination of those third parties is that the threshold for victory goes higher and the threshold for a majority goes higher, and by a lot.
Does voter turnout have anything to do with it? We had 67%, which I believe is the same as 2019. Far cry from the record in 1962 of 79%, but typically this is what we get. What kind of impact could that have had?
I'm not sure it impacted the final outcome, but I've got to say I'm a little bit surprised by the voter turnout. That's a fully respectable voter turnout, but it's not a crushingly huge voter turnout as I was expecting us to see. There were a whole bunch of signs that people were coming out in droves to vote. And in the end, we just got a good voter turnout.
Okay, let's drill down on what this means. Elections come and go, but it's actually the Governor General who determines governments of the day. So if you would indulge us and kind of nerd out on actually what's happening in here and what's at play.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to be pedantic here. Yeah, you're right. In our system, we do not have an election-based system. We have a confidence-based system or confidence-centric system. The main event in our elections, in our system, is not an election. The main event is the Governor General tapping somebody on the shoulder and saying, "Can you form government?" So that's why this is not the beginning of a new government. This is not, we're not going to see the swearing in of a new cabinet. You're going to hear that. There's going to be like lazy shorthand all over the place, but this is not a new government. It's a continuation of the 30th government, which was sworn in mid-March and which will continue for as long as Mark Carney is prime minister. Could be a year, could be 10 years. We don't know. Elections will come and go, but that same government will continue throughout. Justin Trudeau, he led the 29th government. It lasted 9 years. Elections came and went. It was the same government throughout. There were cabinet shuffles after elections, but not new cabinets or new governments being sworn in. That's just, sorry, pedantic, quirky, but that's how our system works.
But that's what gets you out of bed every morning, knowing all this stuff, I think. And so 45th session of Parliament?
That's right. 45th Parliament, continuation of the 30th government, and continuation of the 24th prime minister's mandate.
Okay, so anyone who shows up at Politico Trivia Night, you just gave them an answer and they owe you a beer. So we're in the 49th session of Parliament, 30th government, 24th prime minister.
That's right.
Okay, so we had no clear winner last night. We had a few losers. The leader of the NDP failed to hit, lost a lot of seats. They don't have official party status. Jagmeet Singh stepped down. And then Pierre Poilievre, the leader of the opposition, did not win his seat, even though it was a really good result overall compared to the last election.
Yeah. So let's start with the New Democratic Party, Canada's leftmost party, at least traditionally. They come back with 7 seats. They fall short of the 12 minimum seat threshold to be recognized as an official party in the House of Commons. That comes with funding, that comes with extra staff, that comes with status on committees and in question period and so on. So they forgo all that. Technically, those 7 New Democrats will be sitting as a collection of rando independents on paper. So that's a big blow to them. They're basically going to have to survive on you know, the charity and cross-subsidization of their provincial parties to stay afloat, to finance their leader's office, their, you know, their party HQ, and so on. So it really is a crushing blow for them. So then there's the Conservatives. You're right. The leader of the Conservative Party, Pierre Poilievre, did not win his seat, which means that he is still, you know, morally leader of the opposition, but for parliamentary purposes, he will not be leader of the opposition because he does not have a seat. He'll have to delegate that responsibility to somebody else.
And who likely would that be?
Well, he's got options. It's up to him. He can designate his house leader to be acting leader of the opposition. He could designate one of his deputy leaders to be acting leader of the opposition. He'll have to make that decision. And that's the person that we're going to be seeing in question period, leading parliamentary efforts, holding, you know, press conferences on the Hill and so on until he runs in a by-election and wins in a by-election. And that could take a while. It could be the end of the year before that happens.
Okay, before we go there, you mentioned the house, but what about the house that the leader lives in, Stornoway? Who gets a key to that?
Well, yeah, I mean, technically, it would be the acting, the interim leader of the opposition who would be moving into the official residence of the leader of the opposition, because that person would be leader of the opposition, whether it's the house leader or the deputy leader. So they would be the one formally, or should be, moving into the official residence and carrying out all the duties of the leader of the opposition.
Okay, so Mark Carney is in Rideau Cottage. Not clear who's going to be in Stornoway. What happens next with government?
The Elections Canada process takes 35 days. According to election law, they have 35 days for any recounts. Some recounts are automatic if the delta was very low between the two frontrunners. Some can be requested. There's the official returning of the writs. There's a swearing in of new MPs. So that process is given 35 days, which means, you know, sometimes after an election, you'll have a prime minister saying, "And I want the House back on Tuesday." Well, it can't. It can't happen because there's an administrative process that needs to happen first. So yeah, you can put on your running shoes and hold a press conference saying we're going to start sprinting, but not in Parliament, not yet. So don't really expect anything until June 2nd. That's when that Elections Canada period concludes, when all the writs have to be in and people should be sworn in and that sort of thing. So once we get into early June, then step one, you know, the House will reopen. On day one, they will elect a new Speaker of the House of Commons. On day two, there will be an official reading of the speech from the throne by the Governor General. And that will lay out the government's agenda based on the Liberal election platform. And then as of day three, they can start doing stuff. They can start introducing legislation, debating legislation, and so on. And the most important thing they need to do before summer is they need to pass supply. They need to authorize the collecting of taxes and the spending of money to fund the operations of the Government of Canada. The special circumstances of the Governor General doing this by special warrants, because we were in a dissolution period, that runs out. So the number one critical thing, they have to pass supply. Politically, they'll probably want to try to pass some signature political piece of legislation as well, just to go into the summer saying, we did that.
Okay, so you're bringing up something I'm curious about. In Canada, we've only had minority governments about 25% of the time. There is a separate dynamic there. What are you expecting in this parliament?
Yeah, you know, you're right. Canada has a tradition of majority governments. And it's true, we've seen more minorities recently, but our political culture is forged in a majority tradition. You know, if you look at the numbers since 1867, you know, the Constitution of the construction of Canada as we now know it, we've had majority governments for 119 years, whereas we've had minority governments for 39 years. So like 3/4 to 1/4 kind of spread.
Yeah.
So our political culture is forged in a majority consciousness. That means when we don't get a majority, as was the case with this election, there's a general sense that that is aberrant, that that is unusual, and that that is temporary. And that has an impact on parliamentary dynamics and on parliamentary culture. In most European countries, for example, you'd never expect to win a majority. It's just a given. You've got five or six parties. All of them will come back with some seats. Nobody has more than 50%. So the election is part one. Part two is a couple of weeks of negotiations to see who can forge a workable coalition. And then you figure out who's going to be governing and so on. We don't have that tradition. That is a foreign cultural tradition to what we have in our version of a Westminster system. So that's why, like, the closest we ever get to a coalition was the confidence and supply agreement that we had during the last parliament with the New Democrats propping up the Liberals. It wasn't a formal coalition. They didn't have cabinet seats. There wasn't formal power sharing, but it was informal power sharing through a confidence deal. That's as close as we ever get. Now, an additional dynamic here is, counterintuitively, because we have a majority-centric political culture, it means that our minority parliaments tend to be more partisan, not less partisan. That seems ironic for any Europeans listening. It's like, huh? That makes no sense. Please tell me more. It's the conventional wisdom, the folklore, is that minorities they require you to engage in conciliation and collaboration and cooperation and deal making and brokerage. Theoretically, yes. And in Europe, that's what you see happening after a minority. In our system, it doesn't happen. Party or governments will try to do it on their own. They will cut deals bill by bill to hobble along and survive until they can try to actually up their standing to a majority status. So it means that all parties are constantly on a war footing. Nobody knows when the next election is going to be. So that uber partisanship that you get in an election year never fades away. With a majority, you get that on year four, then it fades away. You go into governing mode. Everybody kind of relaxes a little bit. And then by year four, the partisanship starts to escalate again. Under minorities, that partisanship, that strong, fierce partisanship, just becomes normal and entrenched.
Okay, I just want to have one more scenario then. That's really interesting what you're saying. Because when we lay out the unique situation that the opposition is in, where the leader of the party does not have a seat, you laid out a timeline of that taking at least half a year, pretty much. So supply a confidence vote in the House.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you mean a vote of non-confidence?
Sorry, a vote of non-confidence.
Oh, who knows? There's an infinite number of possibilities that can happen. There will be confidence votes. I mean, the first thing they need to do is pass supply early this spring. That is intrinsically a confidence vote. We should probably assume that, I'm sure the government is not going to fall in June. So somebody is going to find a reason to support the government. The NDP are not going to be looking for a new election anytime soon. They're in shambles. It's probably going to be the NDP, maybe plus the Bloc, plus the Greens. That's just enough to get over, over the majority threshold. So we're probably not going to have any high drama until the NDP kind of sort themselves out, have a new leader, start to rebuild and so on. They're probably going to be an implicit, although not official, supporter of the government. And like, you can't rebuild from rubble if you are a formal part of a power sharing or some sort of a supply and confidence agreement. That's why we're not going to have another confidence and supply agreement in this parliament, like guaranteed. The NDP would find it impossible to rebuild from the rubble they're now in if they were once again the junior partner to another party.
Okay, and final question. I'd like to close on this. A lot of this election was, the sentiment was triggered by our former major ally who is now threatening to annex Canada. How would the Trump administration view a minority government? Now that we've had our election, it's been settled. Does a minority government, from an American perspective, paint us as a weaker partner, or doesn't make a difference? I'm just curious.
Theoretically, it could portray us as a weaker sitting duck. You know, to be the kid shoved into the locker by the bully. Theoretically, that could be the case. In reality, look, the United States Embassy has a large building. tons of staff, smart analysts. The reports that they're sending, that they're going to be sending back, are probably going to be, you know, you can assume a minimum of 12 months stability, because that is fact. Nothing, we're not going to see anything dramatic happen here. We're not going to see the government fall in 12 months. This government has probably got somewhere between 18 to 24 months in it, and that's going to be the reporting back. So it's probably de facto going to be seen as a reasonably stable government to be negotiating with.
Okay, well, let's end on a high note. Yaroslav, it seems like we need to come back for another podcast. This was supposed to be election coverage, but the dust is still going to be settling over the next week or two.
Right? Yeah, there's going to be a lot going on. We're probably going to have a cabinet shuffle coming up soon. We're going to have a new agenda articulated in the early in June, and still lots going on, especially on the bilateral Canada-US front. Lots.
Okay, so we're going to keep that swinging.
All right. Thanks, Heather.
We'll see you next week, Garrow. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.